Welcome to Chai with Ping. This is Ping Robert. In this podcast, I cover immigrant stories, cross-cultural experiences, and minority issues. Join me with a cup of chai and take a listen. When I am ready with the intro, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Welcome back to Chai with Ping. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today, we're going to focus a little bit about life coaching and beliefs about ourselves, and especially related to immigrant families and cultural biases. I have a very special guest that they found me online. I don't know how they do that, but they want to really focus on their services for immigrant families. So let's talk about stress, anxiety, or going crazy over things, but then there must be some good ways that we can navigate through different contexts. So let's welcome today's guest, Kamini Wood.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I know. So for just a little background, I know that the listeners might be like, who Kamini? So so you own this company, Live Joy Your Way, right?
Yes.
And you're a certified life coach, and you help clients to achieve better in their goals, in their relationships, or even career. And then you also help people to take courageous steps in identifying limited beliefs, reason for, this is a hard word, stagnation, and overcoming self-doubt in order to live a fulfilling professional or personal life. Tell us a little bit about what you do as well.
Yeah, so I really do. I work with people one-on-one, trying to help them understand what thought processes or belief systems or narratives are keeping them from moving themselves forward. Because oftentimes we don't realize that we have these core beliefs about ourselves or these narratives and stories that we're telling ourselves that are actually the things that are running kind of on autopilot in our subconscious. So the work that I do with my clients is offering that space to truly create the ability to bring those things to the awareness. And as we bring those things to the awareness, we can then either challenge them and ask, like, is this a belief that's actually serving me? And if not, what committed action do I want to take in order to shift that? And then what steps am I going to take to work towards and lean into the goals that I'm setting for myself? And so that's really about, you know, truly what I'm doing with people is creating a space for them to just understand themselves on a deeper level. Because at the end of the day, if we can understand ourselves better, that's going to solidify that relationship we have with ourselves. And that is the longest relationship we're ever going to have, is the one with ourselves.
Well said. I was reading your introduction. I was like, you help high performers or overachievers. And then, you know, from my channel, we focus on cross-cultural people and immigrants. Yeah. And from yourself and your background, how do you find that intersection with yourself and immigrant families? I know that you're a second generation Indian American.
Yes. So both of my parents immigrated to the States in their teens. My mom was about 13, dad was about 19. So I straddled both worlds, right? Being raised with the Indian culture in the background, also being raised in with the American culture, because you're also trying to find that symmetry, or how do you fit in? How do you find that balance? I will say that being part of the immigrant culture, there was an underlying belief and narrative around achievement, because when you're here as an immigrant, there is an element of proving yourself. There's an element of working towards these goals that you set for yourself, because you've come across from wherever, whatever country here, and you're striving to do the best you can and provide for your family. So I know for like my parents, they worked extraordinarily hard. You know, they worked from early morning to the evenings. I was a latchkey kid, meaning I was dropped off before school, and then I had somebody pick me up from school, and I was at her house until 6:30 at night, where my parents finally were able to get me. And I never look back at that with any animosity. It's just recognizing that that was the mindset. Through that process, I will share transparently that that's sort of where my high achieving perfectionism came into play, because I'm watching my parents work really hard. And so the thought process as a 5-6-year-old is, well, I don't want to be a burden to them. It's not a conscious thought again, right? I knew that I didn't want to be a problem. Later in life, I've been able to identify it as, I didn't want to be a burden. But that's really where a lot of my perfectionism came from, because it was, if I do things right, I don't fail. My parents don't have to worry about me. And that was the way that my little six-year-old self assimilated what I was experiencing watching my parents work really hard.
Do they ask you or require you to do some things to reach some, expectations?
So I was actually, my parents have always been very just open and welcoming with whatever my sister and I did. Like have always been very supportive. So I did not have those expectations from them. For me, it was internal expectations. I know that some individuals who do have the cross-cultural, they'll have those external expectations, right? Like maybe they're here as, again, a first-generation American, and they're getting those expectations put on them by their parents. And again, it's not about judgment on the parents. It's because our parents have their own experience and their own story. And so it's never about judging it. It's just recognizing that that's then the message that they're putting onto their kids. And so they're the children are the recipients of that external message. They have to do A, B, or C, right? They've got to achieve the 1600 on the SATs. They've got to achieve the straight A's. They've got to get into the Ivy League program. And that's a lot of pressure. That is a lot of pressure.
And how do you usually talk to them when they want to navigate that? Because for example, lots of international students come here with limited resources, especially coming from Asia or even, developing countries. They already used up most of the resources they have back home. And then they push it to like all the way to the US and study here, or even to, some other, European countries. But they're like looking back, like, we can't really go back. Like, I have to make this work. And I have also friends who are working illegally outside, and they're like, we don't get enough funding, and then we're not allowed to work legally. So this is just the route that we're gonna take. How do you talk to them when they're facing, like, they don't have balance in life or work, or they don't have enough space and time?
That's such a great question, and it's almost like a few questions in the one. And so I'm going to take them in pieces, right? So like just dealing with the pressures, the stress that comes with, I have to succeed because I can't go back, or I have to succeed because we've just spent all of our money to get me here. When we focus on that, it's almost like a scarcity mindset. Like I have to do this. It's based in fear, right? When we say I have to, there's fear involved. So then it's really important to really name what is the fear and really bring that thing that you're most scared of to the awareness, right? Because if you name the thing that you're scared of, now you can start breaking it down and you can actually find what's the underlying core belief that could be operating. So just as an example, and I know this from clients, like if I fail and I don't get that 1600 and get into this college, I'm going to have let my parents down. That's what I'm really afraid of. Okay, and what's so bad about letting your parents down? And you kind of drill it down, and what it comes down to is maybe a belief of I'm bad. And really, then we start challenging that I'm bad because we start looking at, well, look at this individual who's come to the States and what you've already accomplished. And we start resetting what we're focusing on. And the other part of it is finding your own value-based action. And what I mean by that is what is meaningful to you about being able to succeed? Meaning, is it really just about getting the 1600 and getting into school, or is there meaning for you? What is your value in going to that? Is there a value in safety or a value in education or learning? Find that, because if we continue to take our actions based on that, we're going to propel ourselves forward. We go so much further than if we are operating from a place of fear, which is I have to do this because I can't go back home. That's like a constriction. And so when we're dealing with this, we have to shift the mindset into how can we get to expansion? Because that's where we're going to have the most possibility and probability for success.
I also feel like what you're talking is a lot of like inner soul searching. How is it different from talk therapy?
So a lot, that's a great question. So first of all, I fully believe in therapy. And talk therapy is great because we need to get some things up and out. Therapy also has an element of diagnosis. Coaching is not about diagnosis. And the way that I approach it is about understanding. So there's no pathologizing. There's no, this is what's going on here. I really take the approach of understanding. The other part that we're really putting into practice is, now that you understand yourself, what action are you going to put into place? What goal do you have for yourself? And how do we break that goal down into smaller bite-sized pieces? And how do we hold you accountable for meeting those goals?
So let's take working illegally as a little extreme, but I was just thinking about my past experience. I was working really, really hard. I was overstressed. I was juggling maybe four jobs throughout a week just to provide for myself to pay for the tuition. What would you say if I'm super stressed?
Yeah. And that's a tough one, right? Because life's challenges in that situation are, I'm trying to pay for tuition. That's important to me. There's value in the tuition and going to school. And the only way for me to do that is to be able to work these four jobs to pay for the tuition. And so sometimes we have to recognize that there's going to be pain in life. Suffering, we can't avoid the pain, but suffering's a choice. So what do I do, and how do I talk to myself when I'm going through the process of working those four jobs? Also recognizing that this is more of a short term, I have to do this. I'm choosing to do this right now because I have a value in the school. It's still a choice. If I choose that the paying the tuition isn't what I want, then I don't have to choose to work these four jobs, because now we're taking an empowered step by saying, I'm choosing to work these four jobs. Then in terms of the stress and just being overtired from working four jobs at once, it really does come down to, how can we break up your time so that we've got it somewhat prioritized, and finding just buckets where you can have those fillable moments of joy and connection with self, because so often we're going from one thing to the next and we don't have any refill time. I mean, I know for me, I'm a mom of five and running my own business, and there are moments where I'm running from thing to thing, right? I'm either doing the thing with my kids, or I am running my business and working with my clients. And I have to be very conscious about carving out time for just myself to refill that cup.
Wait a second. You have five kids? Isn't that something that we should talk about firsthand? Like, how do you juggle through work and life?
Okay, so let me just sort of say, yes, I have five kids, but they're not all little. So my oldest is actually 22. She's a ballerina, so she's living in Virginia right now, so she's working there. My second oldest is in college, so he's second year in college. And then I have a senior, a freshman in high school, and then I do have a fifth grader. So they're not all little children. I think if they're all little, you know, 5 years old and all little, that would be a little more difficult. Yeah. But it has been a ride, and it is always about remembering that balance doesn't mean the same thing every day. Balance is what works for me today.
Let's dig a little deeper on this. I love it, because I feel like there's always the ideology about balance between life and work. Uh-huh. But how do we differentiate what kind of balance is good for today for me or not for others?
Yes. So yes, you're right about that. There's the ideology that I need work-life balance. And it's always like this, you know, getting to work-life balance. And it's reminding ourselves that there is no normal, there's no right answer for work-life balance. First and foremost, it's going to be, what does balance look like for you? And then each day is about, the balance is going to look like, where do I choose to spend my time and attention? Where do I prioritize today? And I will say that actually going from one to two children is what taught me this, because there is, it hits you when you go from one to two children that you can't give both of them 100% of your attention at any time. There's going to be one day where one child needs 75% of your attention and the other one's going to get 25. But the next day it might flip-flop. And at the end of the day, you have to trust yourself that overall it's going to balance out. And the same thing between work and life, right, is that you will balance it out as long as you give yourself the grace to decide each and every day, what do I need to work on today? What do I choose to work on today?
I feel like that's sometimes very hard. Like when you talk about priorities, working as an international professional or student before, it's really hard because like we're trying to get our head above the water and just to survive, mm-hmm. right? Then mm-hmm. I didn't really have the time to think about, okay, what are the priorities that I need to set? Or I'm just overall feeling anxiety and emotional. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are kind of really struggling for survival because money is the minimum that they're just still working for. And what would you say to those people who are just struggling and they're like, oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed, right? Like, what is one thing that I can focus?
Honestly, the moment that what you just said, like the anxiety, the stress, the worry about money, that's the indication that we have to take a breath and ask the question, what's most meaningful to me right now? I've got this long list of things to do. What are the top two things that I'm going to focus on? And we literally take two out of the list and we put the whole list aside and we just look at those two and we get those done. And the reason why it's important to break that down into maybe two is because when we're thinking about motivation too, right? Motivation can be extrinsic or intrinsic. Extrinsic is externally based. Intrinsic is internally based. If we are constantly only motivated by something external to us, it's outside of our control. And if it's no longer there to push us along, we lose all motivation. So it's so important to build this intrinsic motivation. When we take our list and we ask ourselves what's most meaningful, we're doing two things. One, we're dealing with the anxiety because we're recognizing, oh, wow, I'm very anxious. I'm overwhelmed and stressed. So I need to break this down for my own mental health and emotional health. I need to break this down into smaller bite-sized pieces. So we're taking the two most meaningful things that would move us the most forward in this immediate future. Then when we complete those two, we can actually self-affirm, right? Because now we've completed something. So we're self-affirming by being like, I've just done the hard thing. I've just accomplished that. When we self-affirm, we're building our intrinsic motivation naturally. And that's going to want us to then go grab two more things off of our list. And so it's twofold, right? So we're building intrinsic motivation and we're also recognizing and dealing with the anxiety. The anxiety is about, I'm afraid I'm not going to be okay. I'm afraid I'm not going to survive. So how do we take this and break it down into smaller, palatable, bite-sized pieces? It's to take a couple things at a time.
When you're talking, I also thought about, I think a lot of us in this community also feel like they only have one set fixed recipe for success. Yep. And how do we, I feel like maybe we don't know there are other options out there, or how do we treat ourselves better and also be flexible when challenges come? Like, for example, okay, my program just cut the funding and sorry, I'm just going to do a PhD without funding. And now I'm like, either I choose to do it slowly or I don't know, get a loan, get some family support or just drop the program. How do we train ourselves to be more flexible and let, I don't know how to say this, but like let ourselves to be on a break or, you know, give ourselves a break, right?
Yeah.
A little bit kinder to ourselves. And I think that's a big step that I had to learn during the process. What would you say to those people who are struggling?
Yeah. And you're saying it beautifully because it's really about how can we add flexible thinking to what we're doing and an element of self-compassion. Right. So it's about when we're talking about self-compassion, it's kindness over judgment. It's recognizing, hey, we're part of common humanity. Other people have had similar experiences. I might be able to reach out to them to ask them how they dealt with a similar situation. And it's also about present moment. Like I'm here. It's about mindfulness. I'm here in this moment. It's not about the past. I don't have any idea how the future is going to evolve. So let me just be here. And what's the best thing that I can do for myself right now? So that's that element of kindness, right? The element of self-compassion. And then the flexible thinking is recognizing the thoughts, like noticing the thought, like there's this, I'm noticing a thought that there's a recipe for success. Like I'm supposed to follow A, then B, then C, then D. It's a thought. We also know that we have our own way of doing things. Right. And other, that recipe might not be the way that we would like to operate. And it doesn't, maybe it doesn't resonate with us. It doesn't align with us. And so flexible thinking offers up the ability to name that. We can name that there's this recipe out there. And then we can come back to asking ourselves, well, what's true for me? What works for me? What is my values-based action? If I were to design this for myself and it was based in something meaningful to me, what steps would I take? And that's where we can offer and bring into our world this idea of self-compassion and this idea of flexible thinking and recognize that I don't have to do it in a prescriptive way. I can choose to do it in a prescriptive way if that's what I want to do, but I also can change it up. It's like a recipe that our parents give us and we look at the recipe and it's got everything laid out. Sometimes we don't want to add the almonds or the pecans and we want to, add chocolate chips instead. That's what we're doing here. It's giving ourselves permission to say, I see that this recipe is here. I can choose to do it that way, but I can also change it up if it aligns more with me and give ourselves permission to do it that way.
I love what you said. And then it's almost tied up to the next kind of subtitle we have, like self-sabotage. Do you define this? Do you have any examples that we can talk about what self-sabotage do for us? Yeah. And what kind of situation it will come up?
Yeah. So self-sabotage is almost our protector part. It's the part of us that is afraid maybe of failure or afraid of messing up. And so it's the part that pops up that to make sure that they kind of, it stops whatever trajectory, you know, traction you're moving forward. So an example would be like in a relationship, you finally found somebody and you're in this relationship and you're super happy, but there's this part of you that doesn't believe that it's going to last because there's a core belief of I don't deserve love or I'm not lovable, right? And so then you decide for no real apparent reason to either cheat on your partner or to not call your partner back or to ghost them, whatever action you take, that would be a self-sabotaging behavior. It's the protector part taking an action to just protect you from the failure of the relationship before the relationship is going to fail, right? So now you can almost control the fallout. And we see this not just in relationships, we see that work, right? Where like maybe you're up for a promotion or your boss says to you, like you could go up for this promotion. And then you intend, again, subconsciously, but you take action to kind of kill the opportunity for yourself because it's this protector part being afraid of failing or being afraid of being found out as like an imposter or a fake or a fraud because, you know, imposter syndrome is a real thing. And so it's this way of controlling the fallout. What do we do about self-sabotage? It's to challenge this idea because really it's about naming all that it is, which is there's self-doubt. There's the lack of belief in self, the lack of confidence. And it's to actually challenge those thoughts and say, well, what's actually true? Well, what's true is, like, take the relationship example for just a second. What's true is this person is here with me right now. And in the present moment, we're connecting on a great level. You know, in this present moment, I feel respected and I'm respecting my partner. It's about bringing to the forefront what's actually true before taking those steps to and letting that self-sabotage mindset take over.
Thank you. Yeah, this is definitely very helpful for me to kind of think about some of the terms. I feel like a lot of times that we go through things and emotions, but we don't know how to name them. And then almost like naming them give us the authority to know about ourselves and then to be aware what's happening. And thank you for sharing that. And we talked a little bit about the family. So I want to shift gear to another section. It's about, you know, a lot of listeners might have blended family or cross-cultural family, cross-cultural biracial couples, or even they could be third culture kids. When you're working with immigrant or cross-cultural families, what are some common cultural biases that you have seen? And, you know, especially between the first and the second generations, you know, there's a very different ideology or stereotype of how we should grow up and how we should work, how we need to be a person. Yep. What have you seen as examples?
Definitely, there's been some cultural biases, cultural / familial biases, right, that have come up in different client situations. Some examples, one that sticks out, and I've had it several times over several clients, is being in a marriage, for instance, and recognizing that the dynamic has turned toxic, but the parents are really not in support of divorcing because culturally that's not an acceptable thing. And I've seen it both as I'm, you know, a client of mine is male and then a client of mine is female. I will say that some of the female clients have also had to deal with, you know, the cultural biases around what's the woman's role versus what's the men's role. That's popped up as well. But what ends up happening is it becomes this almost like, it's almost competing commitments, right? Because you've got the commitment to honoring your culture and your parents and the values that they have. And they start competing with your own personal values and kind of where you are within yourself. And that can be really difficult to navigate because at the end of the day, this is never about judgment of a culture. It's never about judgment of your parents. It's not a judgment about anything. It's just understanding oneself and where you are in your value system and recognizing that you have to make choices that are aligned with you. Otherwise, you end up becoming a shell of your own person, right? Because you're not living your actual life if you're shrinking. And that's something that I've been up against with a lot of my clients in these dynamics, where they're in a position where the decision that they know they need to make is not in alignment with how they were brought up from a cultural standpoint, or is not in alignment with the culture that maybe their parents were brought up with. And that there's a lot of discomfort that comes with that, and a lot of growth that can happen with that as well, because it offers an opportunity for deeper communication and deeper dialogue around the differences that we're facing between maybe an original culture that we were brought up with and one that we're kind of facing now.
It's very challenging for some of our generation to actually talk to like our parents' generation, because our standards, our concepts are so different. And how would you encourage the younger generation or the older, you know, like how do we engage this kind of hard conversation, especially one side is probably so fixed on their mindset and they don't want to listen to new ideas, or whatever is not aligned, they don't want to do anything about it.
Right. It's so difficult, and I don't want to try to sugarcoat it. I think it's important to say how difficult these conversations can be. What I always say to individuals is, can you lean into empathy and compassion, which allows for a little bit of understanding of where the other person is coming from? It doesn't mean that you agree with them. It means that you're giving them space to have their opinion and their own way of viewing the world. And then when we're dialoguing with people, it's not about using you statements, for instance, like you believe this and you do and you said this. And every time we say you, it puts the other person on defensive. So these conversations need to be more about exploring what, like for me, as instance, like if I were talking to my parents, I would come at it from this is what I'm noticing about myself, and this is what I'm experiencing, and this is where I'm seeing some disconnect. And is it possible for us to potentially find some common ground, just as an example? When we come at it from that place, we're first of all presencing what we're experiencing, and we're not making it about the other person or making an assumption about what they believe or what their experience is. But then we're inviting a conversation to say, what do you now, like now that I've shared this with you, can we dialogue about this and find a common ground? Now that's inviting them to share what their thoughts are. And that's where that negotiation can happen. When I say empathetic and compassionate listening, what I really mean by that is, empathy says, I can put myself in your position. I can kind of understand where you're coming from. And compassion says, like, I can be kind. When we do that, we're recognizing that this other person who has a totally different opinion is also still a human with their experience. And that's why I say it's so important to come at it with no judgment or release judgment and just come at it. I always say to my clients every time, and they tease me about it because they get so used to me saying it, but it's always about curiosity. Come to it with curiosity, compassionate curiosity versus judgment.
I was just thinking, like, there was one couple before they got married, and they're talking to both side of parents. One side, they were so worried because the family don't speak the same language, don't have the same culture. They're by that cross-racial, cross-cultural. And I think the parents were just like, we don't really know if you are going to get a green card to stay in the U.S., right? Both of you. So how does that look? If one of you get a green card, one of them can't, then how does that play out? And I think their worries and concerns are legitimate because they're in the beginning of their career, they graduated from grad school. But then it's how do we kind of swallow that pride and talk to them with empathy? It's really difficult. And what kind of curiosity do we put in this kind of conversation?
In that conversation. The curiosity that I would kind of venture into is getting more curious with what are my parents feeling? What are the emotions behind it? Because really, in what you just described was, yes, they're saying like this could be a problem. Underneath it, what I'm already hearing is fear and worry. And really, it comes down to, I want my children to be safe. Right. And when we go with that curiosity, we're like, what's really happening for my parents here? Is it really that they don't want me to stay and get married because of the cross-cultural stuff? Or what's really happening for them? And can I dialogue with them and get curious about, tell me more about what you're feeling about this. Now we can get underneath it to, oh, wow, they're just really terrified about my safety. Because now we can address that with each other. And it's like, I hear you, mom and dad. I hear that you're worried about my safety. I hear that you're worried about my well-being. And this is what I know is true about myself. I'm resilient. And I also know that if I don't get my green card, if one of us doesn't get our green card, we'll come up with a plan. We'll figure out how we want to handle it. But now we're addressing their concern rather than simply getting into a surface level argument about the fact that we don't speak the same language. Because it's not even about that. At the end of the day, it was about the underlying safety issue.
The same thing can work for couples, you know, or like significant family or friends. It's just like what is actually going on the surface is not always what's underlying, right? Yeah. A lot exactly. of times like, we're driven by fear, anger, sadness, disappointment, frustration, or mm-hmm. just simply unhappy with the decision that they're making, the other person is making. But mm-hmm. but having that, I like it. But it's like, I want to put it as a visual. It's almost like when you see a whole forest, but you have to kind of go through the forest and find the center tree.
Yes. Yes. Right? Yep. Yep.
And,
exactly.
And to talk about it, either it's for work, for family, for friends. A lot of times that we are all blindsided with all the other trees, but then we don't find mm-hmm. the real fruit tree we're looking for. So then we go around the circles and talk about emotional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then mm-hmm. we don't have the curiosity. Is like, and I feel like even if one side has the curiosity, the other side might not be have, they might not have the awareness how they're really feeling. Mm-hmm. Right? Like mm-hmm. mom and dad, mm-hmm. when they talk about like how worried they are, they talk about money, career, where they're gonna mm-hmm. stay. And then yep. if we, like, we come out like, mom and dad, what are you worried about? And they're like, this is what I'm worried about. Like, I don't know right. how to tell you how I'm right. feeling. Right.
Right.
It's like,
right.
they don't know. They don't have
they don't know.
The names for those emotions.
And yeah. And that can be hard.
Right.
That can be really hard because you almost feel like it almost triggers. I've been on the receiving end of this. It's like, oh my gosh, well then we're stuck. But really yeah. what it is it's pushing us to continue the conversation as uncomfortable. Because mm-hmm. most of the time it's our uncomfortability that stops the conversation. It's like, I hear like you are freaking out about money. You're really upset about money. You're really scared about money. Oh, tell me more about being scared, right? Like we can get there by just continuing to kind of push them and just we say it in a slightly different way and we acknowledge like I hear you I hear the like nervousness in your voice. Is that what you're feeling? Are you feeling nervous? And we can kind of help them start naming some of the feelings if they're not able to. That's what I mean by compassion, right? That's what I mean by empathy, because we're putting ourselves in that same situation. We're like, oh, they're having trouble naming this because maybe they're not versed in naming their emotions because so many of us push our emotions aside. Who's got time for emotions? I got to go do the thing, right? And so it's most of us, it's a new skill that we're learning is actually paying attention to the emotion.
There are two groups of the people I want to mention today, and maybe we can give them some practical takeaway tips. One circle, they could be struggling, just like what we talk about. Like they're really striving their lives and studies or work. Your tip for them was to be aware of what they have, right? The choices mm-hmm. and all that. Anything mm-hmm. else you would like to provide?
Being aware of their choices as well as finding their own values-based mm-hmm. actions, right? So come back to your own core values. What is meaningful for you?
Yeah.
Because when you keep recentering and regrounding in that, we yeah. start to lose the stories of everybody else, the narrative of like, I have to go do this.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. that's for the first group of person I want to address. The other people, they could be having a breeze, you know, a stroll mm-hmm. in the park, right? It's like, how does this relate to me? How does that matter? Mm-hmm. Tommy, what would you offer to these people when they're like, everything seems fine?
You know, maybe everything is fine. And I want to make room for that because not all of us are struggling, right? Not that's all right. of us are dealing with things, right? So let's make room for that. Like yeah. amazing if that's yeah. who you are. I think that yeah. that's awesome. Those of you who might be thinking and feeling like everything is a breeze, maybe just doing a quick check-in. Am I living into what it is that I really want for myself? or am I kind of floating along? Because there's a difference between floating along in a sort of reactive way, like it's a breeze. I'm just sort of on the floating tube and it's just like everything's fine. And it could be that you're really okay with that and that's totally fine. It's just give yourself a little bit of opportunity to get curious with that. Is there anything else that I'm wanting for myself? Is there anything else that I would be excited about doing or learning or experiencing? And just, again, seeing if that's possible and creating space for that.
I want to ask you about your work, right? You're a life coach and then you mm-hmm. have your company Live Joy Your Way. When I was looking at the title, I was like, oh, that's interesting because you chose joy instead of happiness. Mm-hmm. What yes. are the differences for you?
So happiness is an emotional state like any other emotional state. It's more about, you know, emotions will, generally speaking, they're about a 90-second lifespan. They rise and crest. The reason why they seem to last longer is because we have thoughts about the emotions, which kind of causes it to rotate. Joy is an actual way of being. Like, I'm actually in joy. I'm feeling fulfilled. That's how we fill our cup back up. And so for me, it's about finding that joy. And the reason why I named it Live Joy Your Way is really an homage to this idea of deciding for yourself how you determine success, you determine joy, rather than having somebody else prescribe it for you.
Got it. What else do you, so what services do you provide for people?
Yes. So I work with people one-on-one where we are diving deep into that deeper understanding of self and what it is that you want. Mm-hmm. For those people who aren't at the ability to be able to invest in something like a one-on-one atmosphere, there are a couple of e-courses that I offer. And then I do even have some e-books on things like anxiety, cultivating self-compassion, which are also available.
Mm. How can people find you?
On my website at comedywood.com, or I'm also on Facebook and Instagram with the handle It's Authentic Me.
Awesome. Is there anything else you would like to mention before we end this episode?
I think the one thing that I would like to offer is, you know, as a daughter of immigrants, one of the things that I know that I was up against a lot was recognizing that being different was actually okay. It's human nature to want to belong and to be accepted, but belonging and acceptance doesn't mean I have to be the same as the person next to me. I can still be my own unique person. And that's really important, I think, if we just remember that your uniqueness is actually the gift that the world needs.
Yeah. I was just thinking maybe next episode we can talk about your journey, like how you find your strength and confidence, right? Because like, I feel like in your bio in itself, you already talk about you went through that kind of journey and how mm-hmm. did you find mm-hmm. joy and
yeah.
Well, listeners, I will put information in the episode notes and the links and whatever we talked about. There are some resources for you if you want to do one-on-one with Comedy. Her website is there as well, and then feel free to reach out to her. Thank you so much, Comedy, for coming to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Chai with Ping. If you think someone will benefit from this episode, don't forget to share it with them. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram. If you like my show, you can buy me some chai with small donations. Details are in the episode notes. Till next time.